I pictured a man, breathing hard, walking fast, maybe sweating, a blood-stained knife and a crowbar clutched together in his right hand, an empty yogurt pot in his left, stumbling in the dark, nearing a destination, looking down, seeing the pot, hurling it into the undergrowth, putting the knife in his pocket, slipping the crowbar under his coat. "We should look for the container," I said. Summer said nothing. "He'll have ditched it," I said. "Not close to the scene, but not far from it either."
"Will it help us?"
"It'll have some kind of a product code on it. Maybe a best-before date, stuff like that. It might lead us to where it was bought." Then I paused. "And it might have prints on it," I said.
"He'll have worn gloves."
I shook my head. "I've seen people opening yogurt containers, but I've never seen anyone do it with gloves on. There's a foil closure with a tiny little tab to pull."
"We own 100,000 acres here."
I nodded. "Square one. Normally, a couple of phone calls would get me all the grunts on the post lined up a yard apart on their knees, crawling slowly across the terrain like a giant human comb, staring down at the ground and parting every blade of grass by hand. And then doing it again the next day, and the next, until one of them found what we were looking for. With manpower like the Army has, you can find a needle in a haystack. You can find both halves of a broken needle. You can find the tiny chip of chrome that flaked off the break." Summer looked at the clock on the wall.
"Our 30 minutes are up,"
she said. We used the Humvee to get over to PsyOps and parked in a slot that was probably reserved for someone else. It was 9 o'clock. Summer killed the motor, and we opened the doors and slipped out into the cold. I took Kramer's briefcase with me. We walked through the old tiled corridors and came to Norton's door. Her light was on. I knocked, and we went in. Norton was behind her desk. All her textbooks were back on her shelves. There were no legal pads on view, no pens or pencils. Her desktop was clear. The pool of light from her lamp was a perfect circle on the empty wood. She had 3 visitor chairs. She waved us towards them. Summer sat on the right, I sat on the left. I propped Kramer's briefcase on the center chair, facing Norton, like a ghost at the feast. She didn't look at it.
"How can I help you?"
she said. I made a point of adjusting the briefcase's position so that it was completely upright on the chair. "Tell us about the dinner party last night," I said.
"What dinner party?"
"You ate with some armored staffers who were visiting." She nodded.
"Vassal and Coomer,"
she said.
"So?"
"They worked for General Kramer." She nodded again.
"So I believe."
"Tell us about the meal."
"The food?"
"The atmosphere," I said. "The conversation, the mood."
"It was just dinner in the O Club," she said.
"Someone gave Vassal and Coomer a briefcase."
"Did they? What, like a present?"
I said nothing.
"I don't remember that,"
Norton said.
"When?"
"During dinner," I said, "or as they were leaving." Nobody spoke.
"A briefcase,"
Norton said.
"Was it you?"
Summer asked. Norton looked at her blankly. She was either genuinely puzzled or she was a superb actress.
"Was it me, what? Who gave him the briefcase? Why would I give them a briefcase? I hardly knew them." "How well did you know them?" "Well, I met them once or twice, years ago." "At Irwin?" "I believe so." "Why did you eat with them?" "I was in the bar. They asked me. It would have been rude to decline."
"Did you know they were coming?" I asked.
"No," she said. "I had no idea. I was surprised they weren't in Germany."
"So you knew them well enough to know where they're based?"
"Kramer was an armored branch commander in Europe. They were his staffers. I wouldn't expect to find them based in Hawaii."
Nobody spoke. I watched Norton's eyes. She hadn't looked at Kramer's briefcase longer than about half a second. Just long enough to figure I was some guy who carried a briefcase, and then to forget all about it.
What's going on here?
She said. I didn't answer.
Tell me.
I pointed to the briefcase. This is General Kramer's. He lost it on New Year's Eve, and it showed up again today. We're trying to figure out where it's been.
Where did he lose it?
Summer moved in her chair.
In a motel, she said, during a sexual assignation with a woman from this post. The woman was driving a Humvee. Therefore, we're looking for women who knew Kramer and who had permanent access to Humvees and who were off post on New Year's Eve and who were at dinner last night. I was the only woman at dinner last night.
Silence. Summer nodded.
We know that. And we promise we can keep the whole thing quiet. But first, we need you to confirm who you gave the briefcase to.
The room stayed quiet. Norton looked at Summer like she'd told a joke with a punchline she didn't quite understand.
You think I was sleeping with General Kramer?
She said. Summer said nothing.
Well, I wasn't,
Norton said.
God forbid.
Nobody spoke.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry, she said. I'm seriously conflicted. That's a completely absurd accusation. I'm astonished you made it.
Nobody spoke for a long time. Norton smiled, like the main component of her reaction was amusement, not anger. She closed her eyes and opened them a moment later like she was erasing the conversation from her memory.
Is there something missing from the briefcase?
She asked me. I didn't answer.
Help me out here, she said. Please. I'm trying to see the point of this extraordinary visit. Is there something missing from the briefcase?
Vassil and Coomer say not.
But?
I don't believe them.
You probably should. They're senior officers.
I said nothing.
What does your new CO say?
He doesn't want it pursued. He's worried about embarrassment.
You should be guided by him.
I'm an investigator. I have to ask questions.
The Army is a family, she said. We're all on the same side.
Did Vassil or Coomer leave with this briefcase last night, I said. Norton closed her eyes again. At first I thought she was just exasperated, but then I realized she was picturing last night's scene at the O Club coat check.
No, she said. Neither one of them left with that briefcase.
Are you absolutely sure?
I'm totally certain.
What was their mood during dinner? She opened her eyes.
They were relaxed, she said, like they were passing an empty evening.
Did they say why they were at Byrd again?
General Kramer's funeral was yesterday at noon.
I didn't know that.
I believe Walter Reed released the body and the Pentagon handled the details.
Where was the funeral?
Arlington Cemetery, she said. Where else?
That's 300 miles away.
Approximately, as the crow flies.
So why did they come down here for dinner?
They didn't tell me,
she said. I said nothing.
Anything else?
She asked. I shook my head.
A motel?
She said.
Do I look like the kind of woman who would agree to meet a man in a motel?
I didn't answer.
Dismissed,
she said. I stood up. Summer did the same. I took Kramer's briefcase from the center chair and walked out of the room. Summer followed behind me.
Did you believe her?
Summer asked me. We were sitting in the Humvee outside the PsyOps building. The engine was idling and the heater was blowing hot stale air that smelled of diesel. Totally, I said, as soon as she didn't look at the briefcase. She'd have gotten very flustered if she'd ever seen it before. And I certainly believed her about the motel. It would cost you a suite at the Ritz to get in her pants.
So what'd we learn?
Nothing, I said. Nothing at all.
No, we learned that Byrd is a very attractive place, apparently. Vassal and Kuma keep coming all the way down here for no very obvious reason.
Tell me about it, I said.
And that Norton thinks we're a family.
Officers, I said. What do you expect?
You're an officer. I'm an officer.
I nodded. I was at West Point for 4 years, I said. I should know better. I should have changed my name and come back in as a private. 3 promotions, I'd be an E-4 specialist by now, maybe even an E-5 sergeant. I wish I was.
What now?
I checked my watch. It was close to 10 o'clock. Sleep, I said. First light, we go out looking for a yogurt container. I'd never eaten yogurt myself, but I'd seen some, and my impression was that individual portions came in small pots about 2 inches wide, which meant you could fit about 300 of them in a square yard, which meant you could fit nearly 1.5 million of them in an acre, which meant you could hide 150 billion of them inside Fort Byrd's perimeter wire, which meant that looking for one would be like looking for a single anthrax spore in Yankee Stadium. I did the calculation while I showered and dressed in the pre-dawn darkness. Then I sat on my bed and waited for some light in the sky. No point in going out there and missing the 1 in 150 billion chance because it was too dark to see properly. But as I sat, I started to figure we could narrow the odds by being intelligent about where exactly we looked. The guy with the yogurt obviously made it back from A to B. We knew where A was. A was where Carbone had been killed. And there was a limited choice of places for B. B was either a random hole in the perimeter wire or somewhere among the main post buildings. So, if we were smart, we could cut the billions to millions and find the thing in 100 years instead of 1,000. Unless it was already licked clean inside some starving raccoon's den. I met Summer in the MP motor pool. She was bright and full of energy. But we didn't talk. There was nothing to say, except that the task we had set for ourselves was impossible. And I guessed neither of us wanted to confirm that out loud. So we didn't speak. We just picked a Humvee at random and headed out. I drove, for a change, the same 3-minute journey I'd driven 30-some hours before. According to the Humvee's trip meter, we traveled exactly 1.5 miles, and according to its compass, we traveled south and west. And then we arrived at the crime scene. There were still tatters of MP tape on some of the trees. We parked 10 yards off the track and got out. I climbed up on the hood and sat on the roof above the windshield, gazed west and north, and then turned around and gazed east and south. The air was cold. There was a breeze. The landscape was brown and dead and immense. The dawn sun was weak and pale. "Which way'd he go?" I called.
"North and east," Summer called back.
She sounded pretty sure about it. "Why?" I called. She climbed up on the hood and sat next to me.
"He had a vehicle," she said.
"Why?"
"Because we didn't find one left out here, and I doubt if they walked."
"Why?"
"Because if they'd walked, it would have happened closer to where they started. This is at least a 30-minute walk from anywhere. I don't see the bad guy concealing a tire iron or a crowbar for 30 solid minutes, not walking side by side. Under a coat, it'd make him move like a robot. Carbone would have twigged. So they drove, in the bad guy's vehicle. He had the weapon under a jacket or something on the back seat. Maybe the knife and the yogurt, too."
"Where'd they start?"
"Doesn't matter. Only thing that matters to us now is where the bad guy went afterwards. And if he was in a vehicle, he didn't drive outward towards a wire. We can assume there are no vehicle-sized holes in it. Man-size, maybe, or deer-size, but nothing big enough to drive a truck or a car through."
"Okay," I said.
"So, he headed back to the post. He can't have gone anywhere else. Can't just drive a vehicle into the middle of nowhere. he drove back along the track and parked his vehicle and went about his business.
I nodded, looked at the western horizon ahead of me, turned and looked north and east back along the track, back towards the post.